Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's 100% natural, hormone-free, and side-effect-free. Here's how it works. The app analyzes daily changes in your body temperature to find your fertile window, so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. Natural Cycles is a clinically proven non-hormonal birth control option that's 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. No synthetic hormones, just science. And if you're ready to start family planning, switching from preventing to planning a pregnancy is as easy as tapping a button. Plus, the Natural Cycles app makes tracking fertility easy. You can measure your temperature trends using an Oura Ring, Apple Watch, or our Bluetooth thermometer, which is free when you sign up for an annual subscription. Join over 4 million registered users who are taking control of their fertility naturally. Save 15% when you sign up with code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com. That's RADIO15 for 15% off today.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
I think that I'm looking forward to the opportunity to give young men the opportunity to not only play college basketball. You know, I love basketball, but I always say this, everything I do in life is bigger than basketball. I'm going to give these kids the opportunity to get their degree, to learn life skills, you know, learn what it means to be committed to something, to be consistent, to be confident in yourself.
And our guest this week is Darnell Artis. He was just named the new head men's basketball coach at his alma mater, Division III Gwinnett Mercy University. He is a Harlem Globetrotter, a product of LaSalle College High School. And Darnell, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about taking over at your alma mater, replacing an incredibly successful coach in John Barron, who went to take the gig at Division II Holy Family. How did this come together? How long was the process?
It kind of came together rather quickly. Like, you know, I got the call from Coach Barron after he got the job at Holy Family. You know, he let me know that he was, you know, taking a job at Holy Family. He was going to be moving on from Gwinnett Mercy after 25 years. And, you know, he told me he encourages me to apply for the job. And at first I was a little hesitant for a number of reasons. One, over the last few years, I kind of had really found my stride as a Globetrotter, you know, becoming a showman, becoming a leader, not only of just the team, but one of the leaders of the organization. And, you know, when he called me, knowing that next year is such a pivotal year for not just the Globetrotters or not just for basketball, but really for the world, having a Globetrotters 100th year anniversary, you know, on top of it being my 10th year with the team next year, that was tough to kind of just look at and be like, nah, I'm not going to do that next year. But, you know, when I prayed on it, I got a chance to pray on it, talk to my family about it, obviously talk to Coach Barron again, because any life decision I'm making, whether it was for this or anything else, you know, I always talk to Coach Barron. You know, he's always been one of my strongest supporters in my corner. And ultimately, we just decided that, you know, this was the best move to make. And, you know, it was really where God was placing me. You know, God put it in front of me for a reason. And, you know, who am I to question it? So with that being said, I applied, got prepared, got as prepared as I possibly could through the process, and, you know, went up for the interview. And here I am sitting with you today.
Was it odd interviewing at the place you went to college? Did it seem kind of surreal?
No, actually, it just seemed like it was supposed to be happening. You know, I was in a room with three people who knew me since I was 18 years old, and then two people who didn't know me really at all. So, you know, having that good mix and balance in the room kind of just helped me stand there firm. You know, God was, like I said, working through me, and I never felt nervous really for anything in my life. So, you know, I wasn't nervous going into there, and I just felt like it was my time. It was my moment, and that I was going to seize it and just be undeniable. I just knew that I was going to go in there and be undeniable, and that's what I was able to do.
Now, you mentioned playing with the Globetrotters. You've also done a lot of work with, I think it's the Underdogs Summer Yes. Basketball League that you helped create. Mm-hmm. How does that experience help you in this new gig as the head coach at Gwinnett Mercy?
Well, Underdog Sports is my, you know, basketball training company where I train kids from 4 years old up to pros. And we created a summer league, you know, used under that umbrella, Underdogs Basketball Summer League at Lonnie Young, which a lot of people call Lonnie Young Summer League. And just having that opportunity to understand how to build a full organization like that, you know, we call it an empire. And to be able to build something like that from the ground up to where it started, where maybe at our games we would have maybe 50 people out there, 100 people, and it was really cool. And now there's upwards of 1,000 people in our park. And just going through that process, understanding how to manage people, understanding how to be a boss, a CEO, and have people who work for me that I have a strong relationship with, where our personal relationship never gets in the way of our business relationship, where everyone understands we're all on the same team trying to accomplish one thing. So I think going back into my, you know, my current role and my new role, it's taught me how to manage people. It's taught me how to manage financials. I handle, you know, our financial situation with our organization. So it's taught me a lot of different things that I think are going to help me, you know, in my head coaching role.
When you started that, did you start it from a love of basketball, or did you start it because you wanted to connect with youngsters?
The training company actually was already started before I made it an official business. You know, I have a kid named Jamir Williams who's going to be a part of my staff this year. And, you know, he was a Division II All-American at the University of District Columbia, and he's been under my wing since he was 13 years old. So when I was 18 in college, he was always in the gym with me working out, just seeing how what it takes to be a college-level athlete. And it wasn't just him. You know, there was a bunch of other kids, like under our wing, Jarrett Stukes, T. Coop, and just Ty Pickron, a lot of kids that came up under me in the Underdogs umbrella before it was called Underdogs. So when I finally started it as a business, that was like part of it was just to make it legit. And, you know, just litigation, things like that, just starting to be older and understand what paperwork really means for you as a person. And, you know, so that's why we started that. And then with the Summer Basketball League, that started as just something that we wanted to do in our neighborhood. You know, we were going to West Philly for basketball games, South Philly, North Philly, but there was nothing in Uptown, especially at our park. So we wanted to be able to give our park and our neighborhood that same type of feel. And obviously it's just grown into something that's just beyond just our neighborhood now. Let's for the city. I mean, people at our game on Wednesday were there from Detroit, Baltimore, New York, New Jersey, just all over the tri-state area and the DMV. So it's been really cool to build that up.
All right, so now let's dig into your origin story. Was basketball your number one sport when you were growing up?
Actually, no, it wasn't. I was actually a natural baseball player. Like I always tell people, I'm not a natural basketball player. I got really good because I worked really hard. And to this day, you feel me? I wake up every day, go to the gym, shoot as much as possible because that's what made me a good basketball player. My extreme work ethic, I wasn't a natural. I was good as a kid, but when I say a natural, I mean like a pro level natural. And I was a natural baseball player. It was my best sport by far. Freshman year, I couldn't play a sport at all. So I went that whole year of playing no sports. And then when it came back around as a sophomore, I did play basketball. And going to practice every single day was a grind. It was something that I wasn't used to starting in August, September. And by the time the spring rolled around, I was drained. I was exhausted. And, you know, I just didn't want to have to go to baseball practice every single day. And my dad was like, you know, he was pretty frustrated about it, to say the least. And, you know, we had to talk about it. And I just ended up not playing. My dad's always supported any decision I wanted to make as far as that. And I just, you know, decided to just play basketball, focus on basketball. And it turned out to be a pretty good decision.
When, from that point, do you start to really think you can play college basketball?
I always felt like I could be a college basketball player, even when I was on JV as a junior. And I tell every kid all the time that my junior year of basketball is my favorite year of basketball ever. I mean, I was a dominant JV player. I won JV MVP. And I would come to practice every single day and play against our varsity team that was 21-6. They went to the Elite Eight of the state tournament. They went to the Palestra in the Final Four in the PCL. And I would come to practice every single day and give them a problem, like real serious issues. And, you know, I thought that it would help me play. I thought I would get on the court behind that. But, you know, it just wasn't what the team needed. And, you know, I didn't play much as a junior. But that year was my funnest year of basketball. And that's when I knew I was good enough to really play. And I already knew I was good enough from what I did at home. Like, I was playing against guys, obviously, that was playing varsity in the pub and this, that, and the third. And I was always one of the best players on our teams. Like, you know, it was never like he averages 25 in the pub and I don't play varsity, but I'm still the best player on our team. So I knew I could play college basketball, but nobody, you know, was recruiting me. I didn't play AAU. Obviously, I wasn't playing varsity still yet, so I had nothing. And then my senior year, you know, I started to play a little bit more, obviously. And I was starting the starting point guard. And I'm never going to forget the game that Bernie Fitzgerald, who ended up being one of my coaches at Gwinnett, who's going to end up being one of my assistants at Gwinnett now, he came and watched me play against Council Rock North. They had Aaron Morgan, Aaron Goodman, who ended up being two of my teammates at Gwinnett, Rip Engel, who ends up being a point guard after me at Gwinnett. And I played against them. They were like number three team in the state. And I had like 16 points, 4 assists. It was my best game of the year. And Bernie came up to me and said, "You would be great for us at Gwinnett." I didn't know what Gwinnett was. I didn't even know what Division III basketball was. You know, I only knew what LaSalle and Duke and Temple and Kentucky. I only knew Division I basketball. I didn't know anything about anything else. And I talked to Bernie, really, and that staff, the Gwinnett staff, recruited me the entire time through high school. And then in the spring, I started to play in the Positive Image League, and I actually didn't score under 30 points the entire spring. And everyone was like, "Where's this coming from?" And this, that, and the third. And prep schools were kind of starting to pursue me to go to prep school. And I had decided that I was going to go to prep school because of the gauge of interest that I started to get. And then eventually I had two conversations that kind of put me back into the Gwinnett Mercy University boat. One was with my Uncle Mook, who talked to me about, you know, the importance of going to school and, you know, being able to get an education and graduate. And, you know, basketball is a tool and use it, but your education is what's going to carry you through life. And then Coach L was the coach at Hope Charter. He coaches down at Germantown Friends now. And he talked to me about going to Gwinnett Mercy or prep school. And he gave me the pros and cons of both. And he was honest. He told me I could go to prep school, play a year of prep school, probably become a scholarship player, go to a school that gives me a scholarship, not play at all, probably as a sophomore, play and contribute some as a junior to have a chance to start as a senior. Or, and he felt this about me as an 18-year-old, I could go to Gwinnett Mercy University, become one of the best players to ever play there, be all league, build a tremendous resume, get my degree, and have an opportunity to be a professional afterwards and, you know, use basketball as a tool. And ultimately, I end up being a Hall of Famer at Gwinnett Mercy University, going and playing in Brazil, playing for the Globetrotters, and now I'm back here as a head coach. And I texted Coach L the other day, and I told him, if nothing else, you can always tell people I was right about this one kid right here. And he called me last night, too, and we had a great conversation, and he just extended how proud of me he is. And I told him, you know, how much I appreciated that conversation, because I'm 31 right now, and that conversation still means the world to me. And I'm going to be a coach and a mentor for, and I've already been a mentor for kids, but like, I'm really intentional with how I talk to kids. Not because I want them to sit here at 31 and say, "Oh yeah, I talked to Speedy or Darnell or Deej or whatever they might call me when I was 18 and now, you know, I'm successful." I just want them to have that type of support and backing and just honest conversation. You know, if a kid isn't that good, I don't tell him, like, "You're that good." I tell him what he needs to do to become as good as he wants to be. And if a kid is that good, then obviously I give him that reassurance. So being able to be that for kids that I had somebody be for me when really nobody was being that outside of my immediate family and immediate circle, he helped me really, really, really take my confidence to another level back then. And, you know, I always tell him that.
When you first started Gwinnett, did you feel like you had taken a giant step up from a competition, or did you feel very comfortable going from high school to college basketball that, all right, I'm going
to
be okay?
Yeah, well, I mean, when I first got to Gwinnett, honestly, when I went on my first couple like visits and open gyms, I noticed right away that I could play here and fit in here right away. You know, obviously coming from the Philadelphia Catholic League, riddled with Division I talent, Division II talent, Division III talent, just riddled with college talent, period, and real structure. You know, I didn't feel like it would be a major jump going from high school to college. I felt prepared. And, you know, when I got to Gwinnett, pretty much right away in my first weekend, I felt like, oh, yeah, I could really fit in and play here. And then I broke my hand, and I was out for the first 5 weeks of my career. I didn't do any open gyms, anything, until the last day before our first official practice. And right away when I got to our official practice, I could feel myself climbing the ladder. I struggled a little bit with picking up, you know, little things that, you know, a point guard that had already played in college that had transferred there was able to pick up. But, you know, as the time went, I was able to climb that ladder. And ultimately, in our first game, I was the first man off the bench. And it was kind of crazy to me. I knew that I climbed the ladder, but I didn't know I got all the way to the sixth man, you know. So to be able to be in that moment and just understand that I played in the Catholic League, that's high level basketball. So I was able to make that transition. And, you know, my high school coaches, Joe Dempsey and Sheedy, Coach Brown, Coach Donahoe, they were there yesterday, you know, at the press conference. And I was able to thank them for having me that prepared for college basketball.
So at Gwinnett Mercy, you score, I think, over 1,300 points, set the program record for assists, rookie of the year. You were first team all conference. You guys win the CSAC in 2016. Mm-hmm. When you think of that 4 year period, what are the first memories that come rolling back to you?
Definitely that championship game, just how it all played out. Us getting up early, being up on Newman, who was our arch rival, and you know, being them coming back right out of halftime. And I said at halftime to my team, we're up by 10 points against a team that we know is just as good as us. On any day can be 10 or 15 points better than us, just like we can be 10 or 15 points better than them on any given day. And they came out and went on an immediate, like, 15-2 run. And before you knew it, we were losing. Julian Hyatt, who had been the Superman to my Batman, gets his fourth foul. And Brian Hennessy walked dead up to me, looked me dead in my eyes. And we were the three seniors that were there from freshman year to senior year. Aaron Morgan was a senior with us. He came as a transfer. Brian Hennessy looked me dead in my eyes and said, don't pass the ball again. Take the game over. And he said it a little differently than that. But, you know, Brian Hennessy was the one of the few people who, throughout my college career, would say anything needed to be said to me. And I always needed that. He came up and said it to me, and I said, okay, straight like that. And then I took the game over. I scored 17 of the next 19 points. We won a championship, get MVP, the crowd chanting MVP. And my last game at Gwinnett Mercy, it was like a storybook. You really couldn't write it like that. So that is the memory that is always going to be the most fondest. And it was my grandfather's birthday. He had just passed away that summer, so it just felt like a lot of different emotions flowing through me. My family there, everything was, it was something that I always go back on that February 27th every single year and repost everything from that day on my story, because it just still means a lot to me.
So I mentioned at the outset you're replacing your college coach, John Barron.
Yeah.
Full disclosure, I went to college with John Barron at York College, Pennsylvania. Okay. He was on the basketball team. I was the public address announcer for the basketball team. So he had such success and kept that program at such a high level throughout his time there. And I'm sure he'll do the same at Holy Family. As someone who played under him, who he obviously made an incredible impact on you, what makes him such a good coach?
Man, I think the question is, what makes him such a good person? You know, like, him being a good coach, that's just the basketball aspect. But the players like myself and other great players that have gone there, we went there because, first of all, he's very transparent. He's honest. He's upfront, and he's not going to, you know, blow smoke. You know, he's going to tell you what it is. And he has a kind heart, a soft heart. And, you know, as rugged as he can be sometimes and as hard as he can be on you, it's all out of pure love. He wants everybody to, you know, be good basketball players, but he wants us to be great family men, good husbands, good brothers, good sisters, good teammates, and good mentors. And, you know, that's what he instills in us. And the culture of Gwinnett Mercy basketball is family first, and has always been about family before anything else. And that's what makes him such a special coach, is because he's such a special person. And he's been special to me my entire, you know, since I've met him. And, you know, one of the realest moments between me and Coach Barron to this day, and I always tell this story, is our first game ever. You know, I said I was the first player off the bench, and I got fouled really hard, and I got fouled really hard once, and I had two turnovers. He took me out the game and never put me back in that day. And that was a 4.5-hour bus ride. You know, I had family at the game, and I was just really, like, I felt really embarrassed. I was frustrated, so many different emotions, and I didn't say a word the entire 4-hour bus ride back. And Coach Barron called me that night in my dorm room, and we talked on the phone, and he talked about how he didn't want me to lose confidence in myself. And as an 18-year-old who has accomplished nothing and done really nothing at that point yet, I told him there would be nothing that will ever make me lose confidence in myself. And that moment right there, I always feels like was the first moment we really got to learn each other. I got to learn how much he cares about every single player on the team. And he got to learn how confident I am in myself. And I think that that moment also built his trust in me and his belief and his faith in me, because he, looking back at it, he probably was like, wow, this kid really like knows who he is and has a strong sense of confidence. You know, I could put him in some big time moments and not worry about if he's going to be ready for it. And I think that, you know, obviously going forward, we've won championships, been coach of the year and all region and this, that, and the third together. And, you know, he was at my 30th birthday party. He's going to be at my wedding. And, you know, his kids are my little brother and sister. And, you know, it's just everything, all of those things combined. I could talk about Coach Barron for days and days and days. You feel me? He changed my life. He gave me an opportunity to play college basketball. Then he gave me an opportunity to coach college basketball when I was his assistant right out of the gate. And that trust back then was just like even still even stronger as a coach. You know, some of the older coaches would kind of nudge me sometimes. They'd be like, hey, tell John to, you know, get out the zone, or tell John to put such and such back in the game, because he had that type of trust in me and belief. And not me just as a player, because I always felt like it was easy for me to identify it as a player, his trust in me, because I'm going to go out there and do it for him. But as a coach, as his assistant, I realized how much he just respected my basketball mind. You know, even at a young age as it was still developing. And, you know, we had a lot of really cool moments. Him drawing up one of my plays in a crucial timeout as an assistant, and, you know, him trusting my judgment in our championship game when I was an assistant coach, and, you know, not taking the kid out of the lineup. It was a lot of moments where I look at back and I say, wow, our relationship is beyond special. And, you know, it's just something that I'm going to cherish forever.
So you graduate 2016. From a playing standpoint, you get the chance to go down to Brazil mm-hmm. and play professionally. What was that like? And how had you traveled at all outside of the States? Like, was this complete yeah. culture shock when you go down there and start playing?
I think, if I'm not mistaken, well, no. So I had been to Costa Rica. Coach Barron took us to Costa Rica when I was a junior, you know, with the team. It was one of our foreign tours, and we went to Costa Rica and played. That was my first time out the country. And then when I became a Globetrotter, I was actually a Globetrotter for a season first before I went to Brazil. So I was a Globetrotter, and I had went to Canada. So I went to Canada and Costa Rica to that point, and then I got the opportunity to go to Brazil, and of course it was a culture shock. I thought they spoke Spanish in Brazil my whole life, and then I learned they speak Portuguese, like when I'm about to go there and get ready to prep to be there and studying language and stuff like that. And it was just really cool. I think, you know, by getting there and scoring 38 in my first professional game against the national champion, it put me on the map immediately. Everyone knew who I was. When we went to a game 7 hours away, they were kind of waiting at the bus. You know, the kids in my city loved me. The people in my city loved me. It was a really special experience, one that I'm definitely glad that I got to have. And, you know, after my season in Brazil, I didn't have to come back home because it was like I couldn't make it or I wasn't good enough. It was like I led that country in scoring in a really good league with some really good players. Some of those guys ended up playing in the NBA a little bit. Some of them had already played in the NBA. And, you know, some NBA guys end up coming back. I led that country in scoring. And then, you know, I had opportunities to pursue going forward in Brazil and in South America. You know, some teams from Argentina was calling, an agent that I had there in Uruguay. But ultimately, the Globetrotters had called me for my second contract meeting. You know, we had the meeting. They told me some really good things. And I kind of just have always been a big picture kind of guy, even from a young age. I always like to say that I was self-aware. And I just knew what I wanted to do in this life, the type of impact I wanted to make on people, not just as a basketball player, but in my community and things like that. And I asked myself, you know, what helps me make a bigger impact? Just being a professional basketball player, you know. And I think that when you're a professional basketball player, you can get caught up in the congregation of professional basketball players. There is a lot that get to play overseas. And like when I say a lot, I mean, you know what I mean? It's like more than 20, mm-hmm. more than 25, you know, not a ton, like 1%, you feel me? And then I think that when I look back at that and I thought about being a Globetrotter, it's like how many people get to be a Harlem Globetrotter playing for the biggest sports brand there ever was? I don't think that there is many who can say that. And it's a very small population of people who have been Globetrotters. And just having that Harlem Globetrotters on my resume, being able to be in rooms that you can't even pay to get into, creating a network with connections that, you know, there's no way you're going to end up in these certain rooms. And I was kind of well aware of that. And that was the biggest, you know, nudge in me deciding to come back and be a Globetrotter. I had loved the interaction that I got to have with the fans, you know, getting a chance to put on that red, white, and blue, and then helping me build my network and my connections. And God just steers the car the way you needed to be all the time.
We need to take a break. More with Darnell Artis is coming up. But right now, I want to remind you that One-on-One with Matt Leon is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. Meet the next generation of vehicles. Check out the Honda Prologue, Accord Hybrid, or Civic Hybrid. For a limited time, you can get 0.99% APR on a 2025 Prologue, a 2.99% APR on a 2025 Accord Hybrid, or a 4.99% APR on a 2025 Civic Hybrid. Contact your local Honda dealer today. Offers applicable only to well-qualified buyers. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's get back to our conversation with new Gwinnett Mercy University head men's basketball coach Darnell Artis.
I want to come right back to the Globetrotters part of your life, but I'm just curious, playing basketball in Brazil, just the basketball.
Okay.
Is it different? Like, ooh, what I mean, the skill set that you had to lean on in Brazil, yes, was it different than at Gwinnett and in this area and then in this country? Kind of compare and contrast how basketball is different.
Well, it's very fast. They play a very fast-paced game in Brazil. It's very, 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 I probably could say as many varies as I can think of, physical. The physicality level in Brazil, as soon as I got there, I realized I wasn't a man. You know, when you're 23, you graduate in college, you're like, I'm a man. Like, I got there and those guys were bumping me, and I'm like, I am not a man. So, you know, I had to become a man pretty quickly out there. You know, I got in the weight room. I was in the weight room 2 times a day, 6 o'clock in the morning, going to the weight room because I knew that weight room was going to carry me throughout my season. And by the time I got to the season, I had gained like 12 pounds, and I was a little stronger, a little bigger, able to take some of those bumps that I really didn't in the preseason early on. And, you know, even though I scored 40 in my first game, when I go back and watch it, I shot a lot of threes and made a lot of threes. I kind of relied on just, you know, getting skinny through spaces a lot more. But then when I look at some of my film from like the middle of the season, I bumped way more and I just got way more physical. And I always, you know, lean on being a physical player. I teach being a physical player, but the way I got super physical towards the middle of that year and I was now taking a fight to them instead of it coming to me, you know, that was really different for me. Obviously, when you're in college, it's like it's a physical game for sure, but it's not as physical as it was in Brazil. There was nothing that could have prepared me here for how physical that was. And I always see a few jokes like, you know, I know I'm not American here, but like, do I have to bleed for a foul? And it's like, it was that physical for me. And that was fun. I enjoyed it. I got to learn how to play through that. And, you know, that's why it always confuses me sometimes when I come home and I see like overseas pros calling foul, touch fouls and open runs. Like, you're not getting that in a couple months. You know you're not. Like, you know, so I never called foul because I knew I was never going to get those fouls over there, and I wasn't. So that was very different. And just, you know, obviously going from D3 to a pro level, the size of the bigs was very different. Like, bigs at the D3 level are 6'4", 6'5". Some you might come across 6'6". But every big at that level was 6'10", and 6'11", and 6'9". So just little things for me as far as coming off ball screens and just throwing it to the rim, like getting used to doing that, getting used to getting in the lane and really not being able to challenge people in the air with my body anymore, kind of having to get to my pull-ups and shoot floaters. So that was a big adjustment for me too. But, you know, I did relatively well.
So now the Globetrotters. What's first contact with the Globetrotters? Was this something you pursued, or is this something where somebody reaches out to you and says, hey, why don't you look into this?
Yeah, so you get, you know, the Globetrotters have talent scouts. They're watching all the time. So, like, you might think nobody's watching you. Like, if you just won a college slam dunk contest, you're probably going to get a call from the Globetrotters. They know who you are, that you just won. And for me, it kind of came through connection. You know, Coach Barron had already sent Dan Del Conte to the organization. He was a general. And, you know, Dan was a great player at Gwinnett, well over 1,000 points. And on the generals, he was one of their best 4-point shooters, great personality, really good guy. And they called Coach Barron, like, John, this, you know, Eric Nemeth was the contact. And, you know, Eric had called John, like, you know, Dan is great. Do you have anybody else for us? And Coach Barron had told him, you know, this kid, I have a kid now. I think I might have been a junior when he had the conversation. But if he doesn't go overseas, he's going to be a Globetrotter for you. Like, I have your first Globetrotter. And, you know, I ended up getting a call after my senior year, like walking back from like my finals. And I answered the phone and it's like, it's the Harlem Globetrotters. And I hung up the phone and then I walked back up the hill and my phone rang again. And he was like, you know, that's fine. That happens all the time. Told me to come try out. Went to the tryout. Did really well that day in the gym with a lot of Division I, Division II players. You know, I think I probably that day was like the only Division III player there, me and one other guy. And I played really well that day. And, you know, I had a really good interview. And ultimately, I got a call back. And has been a great 9 years since.
Is the interview tryout process with the Globetrotters 100% basketball? Is there a showmanship like aspect of it? They want to make sure that you can
for sure
juggle the two things that are so important.
Well, no, because I couldn't do any tricks when I got this job. When I became a Globetrotter, I couldn't do one thing. I couldn't spin the ball on my finger. I couldn't do anything. I could do a little two ball dribble, but nothing really super special. And you know, I think it's really cool now. I really realized the last, I don't know, 2 or 3 years, what I was able to accomplish that day, because now I am a part of the tryout process. I'm there evaluating players, and I do the interview. And it's really tough. Like, you're coming in there, you're trying to show that you're an elite shooter. You have some type of specialty. Maybe you're really fast, or you can, you know, have a really good handle. You got to show them you're a great player. If you're dunking, you got to show them that you can, you know, complete great dunks, not just come in there and try to show great. Like, can you complete great dunks? And then after doing all of that, you got to eat lunch, and then after lunch, you got to come sit in a room and have an interview, a formal interview, and just show that you can represent this brand. Like, what is your public speaking skills like? What type of person are you? What's your background? All of those things that go into a job. You know, this is, you're about to try to represent one of the biggest brands in the world. You know, they have to make sure that you fit the bill for that, and we have to make sure that you fit the bill for that. And I've been blessed enough to go through that process. So I think it's really cool that I look back and I was able to accomplish that.
Now, your name with the Globetrotters was Speedy, right?
Yeah.
Is that something that is given to you? Is that something that you have to choose a nickname? Is it a collaborative effort? Like, how does your nickname come about?
Well, yeah, they give us that nickname, the nickname Speedy. They give us all our nicknames, honestly. You know, in the last few years, they've tried to, you know, pull some names that people kind of grew up with and that they come in with. And it's been pretty cool to see that. You know, it gives them a special sense of personal connection to their name and, you know, their family to their name. But, you know, like for me, Speedy was a name that they gave me after my first year, kind of just watching how I play, how I move. And it just fit me perfectly, and it's carried with me throughout the years. And, you know, I got to have two different numbers with it. But, you know, the name was really what mattered. And, you know, I was number 43 at first. And I always would try to find a way to make number 43 cool for kids. And I would say I run a 4.3 40, and then obviously I'm on the court looking really fast. So it kind of worked. But, you know, I got a chance to change my number to the number 3 in 2021. And I've had that number for the last 4 years, been my number my whole life. So, you know, it was really cool.
How does playing and preparing to be a Globetrotter for the season, how is it different than preparation for college or when you were playing in Brazil? Or is it different? And I just ask that because there is obviously the showmanship angle of the Globetrotters that you have to practice and work on. You know, how much of a practice is spent drilling up, doing stuff to get ready to play basketball, and how much of it is organizing everything you guys are going to do to wow the crowd?
Well, I mean, all of those things that go into being a Harlem Globetrotter is, first and foremost, it starts with your basketball skills. So you got to come to training camp ready to play, and we come to training camp ready to play. And, you know, we always know that everything else that goes into being a Globetrotter is going to take care of itself with reps, days in front of the crowd, you know, just understanding how these things work and leaning on your vets. You know, obviously I was one of the vets now, but leaning on your vets to kind of see how to move, but always keeping your basketball skills. And what makes you a Globetrotter is that you're here because you're a great basketball player first. So that's what we sharpen up first and foremost. Everything else that goes into the game and to what you get to see when you come out as a fan, those are things that we all get to talk about and, you know, go over. But at the core of it, the first thing you got to do is come ready to play basketball every single day.
I'm sure you were cognizant of what the Harlem Globetrotters were, obviously. But how long did it take you to appreciate the enormity of the brand as you're traveling, as you see the looks in kids' eyes and stuff like that? Like, was it immediate, or did it take you a little while to have like that, wow, I can't believe I'm a part of this?
I think that, you know, I went to the Globetrotters every single year as a kid. So when I became a Globetrotter, I don't think that I ever really sat there and was like, yo, I'm really a Globetrotter, until maybe like my fourth year when I finally got the chance to play at home. It was my first time playing at home. My family was there. Everybody was there. And I was at Wells Fargo standing at the free throw line just looking around like, this is really happening. Like, I came here every year as a kid, and now I'm playing here. And just after that, it just continued to muster. Like, things happened where I would be like, wow, I am here right now. Like, I went and did World Food Day in Rome last year in Italy. You know, me and one of my teammates, Ace, we went to World Food Day, and we were on a stage on a forum in front of the United Nations speaking in our Harlem Globetrotters gear. And it's like, do you realize what we're doing right now? I had to ask her, like, do you realize, like, what we're doing right now? This is not no small thing. Like, this is huge. And I started to kind of do things like that when I was with the younger players, not only to help them understand, but to reassure myself and, you know, get it back to myself what it was that I've been able to do. And even over the last, you know, week or so since the Gwinnett job, I've really started to kind of reflect, you know, that this has been a crazy journey over the last 9 years. It wasn't just a straight line. It was up and down, up and down. And then I started to kind of go up and peak. And I was, you know, going into my peak, I feel like, you know, when this opportunity came through. So it's kind of like, you know, I made a joke the other day. I said, this must have been what Barry Sanders felt like when he retired the NFL, going into his peak. It's like, you just look at it and you think, wow, that was special. But you also think about the importance of things like your family and your future. And, you know, sometimes God just puts it in front of you for a reason.
About how many different countries did you end up traveling with the Globetrotters? Have you ever kind of mapped it out?
I went to 43 countries over my 9 years, most of them over the last 3 or 4 years. You know, I was a part of the international unit for most of the last 3 years until this season that just passed. And I spent so much time in Europe, South America, Asia. I've been all over. And especially that Europe tour is really cool and special that we got to do it so many times in a row. And I've been in Europe so many times since 2021 that, you know, last year during our 2024 tour when we were in Europe, we would go there and, like, there would be people with, like, pictures on their shirt from 2022 and 2021. And a kid drove 7 hours from Amsterdam to watch me play in Switzerland. And he had a huge sign, like, Speedy, I drove 7 hours to see you, because he hadn't seen me in 2 years. And we really have a huge international fan base. And I got a chance over the last few years to become one of those international, like, stars that people really know and love. And this year we didn't do the tour, and my teammates would call me or text me like, yo, these kids and people were asking about you today and asking about Thunder, asking about, you know, Splash and Sunshine, Lights Out and Lou too. So, you know, our unit kind of got to do that tour so many times and they were looking for us. So that was really cool.
Do you have a favorite place that you went? And I don't mean from a basketball standpoint, just like the life experience, like the coolest venue. Yeah.
It's always hard to kind of pinpoint one favorite place. Obviously, I mean, I've been to so many different places and, like, 43 countries, but it's so many cities in those 43 countries. You know, I've been to Italy and France, and London is always great. And in South America, you know, Brazil, I lived in Brazil. So I always tell people Brazil is kind of like the outlier because I actually lived mm-hmm. there and I got to really experience that culture full and through. And so that Brazil is always really special to me. I had people from Brazil reach out to me yesterday when I posted my coaching flyer just saying congratulations, and they still follow me and stuff like that. So, you know, that was really cool. Brazil is really special. But, you know, some of the places in Europe, it's just hard to just choose just one or two. It's like so many of places from Amsterdam to Istanbul. You know, I've been all over. I like to say everything that I've seen in a textbook as a kid, and I was like, oh, that's the Eiffel Tower and the Leaning Tower of Pisa. These are cool. Like, I got to see those things up close and personal multiple times. You know, that's really cool.
How much does the travel, is it a grind? I mean, you guys aren't busing 12 hours for the most part, I would imagine, but maybe.
I mean, you know, it's just different. Every tour is different. Like, our Europe tour is more of a long bus tour. I mean, we take a lot of flights in Europe as well, but that tour is really a grind. You know, there was a time last year in Italy where we would have a game at night, 7 o'clock game, 8 o'clock game, finish it around 10:30, 11 o'clock, get on the bus and then drive to the next city and get there at 7 o'clock in the morning, 8 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
For about a 10 game stretch. So there are stretches like that. You know, we have those type of stretches in France and Italy. And, you know, it's really cool though to have the opportunity to have a sleeper bus and, you know, some of those cool type of things. You know, it's a grind. Obviously, being on tour, everybody's schedule kind of varies. We all have the same base schedule from Christmas Day to, you know, April or May. Like last year, my unit went from Christmas Day to June 3rd. And also before that, we had like a summer tour that my group did, which was from like late middle August to like the middle of September. And then I also did a tour in the end of October until the end of November. So, you know, in like 2023, I toured for like 10 months. 2024, I toured for like 8 months. 2022, I toured for like 9 months. And then this year, I toured for 5 months. And this was my shortest tour in a long time. So, you know, it kind of varies depending on your age and, you know, what group you're on. And it's definitely the traveling part of the grind, especially to do it for as long as, you know, 9 years. Some people are in their 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th, 16th year. And it takes a lot of support from your family at home, a lot of support from your teammates that, you know, you spend more time with them than you do with your family. So, you know, trying to make sure that the environment is always light and fun, but also understand we got a serious job to do every single day. As a balance that, you know, as leaders, you know, I feel like our leadership group right now has done a great job at, you know, understanding that line and teetering between how serious this is and how hard you got to work to be good at it and how many layers there is and how you'll never really know. You'll never know. You think you know a lot, but you don't know a lot. You'll never know how much you know. You're always going to be able to learn. But also understand that we want it to be fun. Team bonding. You know, this year we had hashtag team bonding. And it was really cool. You feel me? And that's just the type of leaders that we have right now with Corey Thunderlaw, Dante Hammer Harrison, and Chandler Bulldog Mac. Those are our top three leaders. And then, you know, kind of like myself and Wham and Jet and Torch and TNT, we kind of fall in line as the next tier of leaders where we all are making this company, you know, as fun as it can be. You know, Cheese and, you know, it's just a lot of that. Jamani's Hot Shot. Our leaders right now are a lot of really good people that love other people, and we always want to help build up.
Was there any place you traveled as with the Globetrotters where you were surprised how much they loved basketball? Because I would imagine, especially at the beginning of your Globetrotter career, you probably go some places you're like,
absolutely.
I don't know. Are they going to like us? And it's probably overwhelmed. Like, what were some places that stood out that maybe surprised you in how much they loved basketball, they loved you guys?
I mean, some countries that I just had never heard of, like Tallinn, Estonia. Like, when you get to Tallinn, Estonia, you're looking around, you're like, these people are going to love basketball. And it's like, then I get on my scooter and I just scooter around the city and, you know, find out how great their food is, find out their love for flower culture, learn a little bit about what they're about. And then when you get to the gym and you see the stands start to fill up, it's like, wow, this makes sense because these people were really nice when I was roaming around the streets. So the fact that they're here and, you know, some people that come to those games don't even love basketball or really know about basketball, but they love the Globetrotters. That's the thing that kind of really always stood out to me. And then you'll get people kind of DMing you like, oh my God, my son loves basketball so much now. And, you know, something that, you know, Thunder, like I said, phenomenal leader. He always wants to touch these fans in a way that, you know, they're going to really appreciate what we do, but we appreciate what you do too. So, you know, he always is dancing to their music or, you know, trying their foods. And, you know, we do a little soccer thing during the game for the fans. And for me, something that I always did, you know, and it's something that I kind of studied from the greats and, you know, saw them do it. And it probably was nostalgic to me. And, you know, since I became a showman, I wanted to do it, but I will always do my best to speak whatever language that we were in for when it's time for me to talk or, you know, make a joke or something, I'm always saying it in their language or trying my best and finding out what song every person in this building will sing and getting them to sing it along with me. And I just, that crowd control and that personal connection with them is something that I know that they really appreciate. And then, you know, during that 30-minute autograph session, they're coming up and they're thinking I speak that language. So now they're all running up to me trying to say something to me in a language. And it's like, I studied a bit, but not that much. So, you know, it's always cool.
And you're hoping to stay connected with the Globetrotters even as the coach at Gwinnett?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, obviously being a coach is a full-time commitment, full-time job. You know, one that is going to have my full heart, mind, and, you know, just everything. But, you know, next year is the 100th year of the organization, something that everybody in the world is looking forward to, including myself. Even as a coach, I'm going to be looking forward to following it. And, yes, I do hope that I can still, you know, serve as an ambassador for the team. Like right now, you feel me? I'm here right now talking to you about the 100th year, how amazing it's going to be. We have so many great things lined up for this 100th year. And what has been really cool is that I have become a part of putting together the 100 year. So, you know, I got this job in the middle of being a part of that committee and that team. So I'm hoping that I get a chance to stay a part of that committee and that team when the schedules align and I can, you know, be a part of those meetings. And when the stars align, maybe I could go to a game or two, you know, after basketball season ends and, you know, we got that little break between the season ended and recruiting season, you know, maybe I could, you know, get a chance to do some things with the organization and, you know, with a team or two, and, you know, just something that we're going to have to continue to talk about in more detail, more fluid conversation that needs to be had. But, you know, I've been able to build a good relationship with the team, with the players, with the coaches, with upper management. And I think that they've been able to, you know, see and feel my value over the last few years. And I've been able to see and feel their value in me over the last few years and the things that I've learned and that I'm going to take with me for the rest of my life. And so, yeah, I definitely hope that I can be a part of this 100th year and something that I'm praying on every single day and, you know, a conversation that I'm looking forward to having with the organization.
What are you looking forward to most about being the head coach at Gwinnett? Because as we're recording this, I think you were introduced yesterday. Yeah. Like, this is still, you are still in filling out the paperwork and figuring out when the medical coverage starts. Like, that's where we are. But what are you looking forward to most, like, once you really dig into the job?
I'm just looking forward to the journey itself. Like, you know, as an athlete, as a player, I always felt like nobody can really judge your journey or write your story for you. You write it, you know, for yourself in accordance with God. And I think that I'm looking forward to the opportunity to give young men the opportunity to not only play college basketball. You know, I love basketball, but I always say this, everything I do in life is bigger than basketball. I'm going to give these kids the opportunity to get their degree, to learn life skills, you know, learn what it means to be committed to something, to be consistent, to be confident in yourself, learn what it is to be reprimanded and, professional way. Like, you know, I'm not going to always just be like, oh no, you know, you'll do better next time. Like, you're going to be reprimanded. You're going to be held to a high standard, and it's going to be out of love because I'm preparing you for this real world. In the real world, you're going to have a boss or a job, or even if you're the boss, you might get reprimanded at times. And to be able to have kids come through me and learn from me. And I think one of the coolest things is that a lot of these kids and people and just all around are going to know who I am. From what I did as a player at Gwinnett, as a Globetrotter, from what I do in the community, for what I've done around the country and worldwide, you know, my network stretches more than just in this area. You know, I have coach friends in Tennessee and North Carolina and Florida and, you know, in California, in Paris. So to have London, so to have these type of connections and to have kids have the opportunity to come and shape their life in a way that I was able to. And, you know, I'm not saying you're going to come be a Hall of Famer or you're going to become a Globetrotter or a pro. I'm saying you're going to come learn how to be a stand-up young man who has high character, integrity, talks with respect, looks people in the eye when you speak to them, shake their hand with confidence, you know, just very respectful going forward. And that's going to carry you to something that you really want to accomplish and do in this life.
And my final question, if I went back in time and talked to, you know, 15, 16-year-old Darnell who had to miss athletics for that whole season, and I sit you down and say, this is what the next decade and a half is going to look like for you, would you have in any way been able to calculate it?
Yeah, I would have believed you.
Really?
I'm not going to lie. I mean, from when I was 8 years old, I told my mom I would change the world. At 8 years old, I told my mom I would change the world. And that was never contingent on if I was doing well, if things were going my way. Always was contingent on who I am as a person at my core, first and foremost, which is confident, committed, and consistent. You know, I'm always committed to the journey that God has me on. I'm always committed to making a difference and making an impact. I'm confident in myself at all turns. Even when I wasn't playing varsity, I was always confident in myself. When I was going to practice every single day, I was confident in myself. When I was in class, I was confident, you know, and consistent. You know, I'm consistent in the way that I talk about me as a person. I'm consistent in the way that I show up and present myself. I'm consistent in the way that I care about people, and I'm consistent in impact. So if you would have told me when I was 16 that I was going to make this type of an impact on the world, on people, on kids, I would have believed you. Like, no doubt in my mind, I would have believed you. And, you know, I always kind of look back at some old pictures from when I was 10 years old and when I was 12 years old and kind of just, you know that those kids would think that this guy is really cool and somebody that they can be. You know, when I was 12 years old, I was told I wasn't going to go to college and that nobody becomes a pro from around here. Like, that kid right there never faltered. So, yeah, I would have believed you 100%.
Darnell Artis, thanks so much. This was wonderful.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And that will do it for this episode of One on One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Darnell Artis, the new head men's basketball coach at Gwinnett Mercy University, for coming in studio and being our guest this week. Now, if you like the show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on X at One on One Pod. You can follow me there as well at Matt Leon 1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.